Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California. Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble
town. Hey everybody, what's going on? It's Owen. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast on Fansmanship.com. I had a chance this week to sit down and chat with Cal Poly men's head basketball coach Joe Calero. Basketball doesn't start for another couple months. At least the season doesn't start. Practice starts pretty soon here, and I had a nice conversation with Coach Calero about what the off season has been like, about having seven guys, I think, who haven't played yet for Cal Poly. I think five true freshmen and two redshirt freshmen, and what the challenges that could go along with that are going to be, especially with a schedule that includes games at UCLA, at St. Mary's, at Nevada, at TCU, and at Washington in the preseason. So Cal Poly, by the time they get to conference play, will definitely be well-tested and road-ready for that as well. Coach Calero is always gracious with the media, I think, and he was no different. He came off as somebody who's kind of had an off-season this year, which I don't think he's been able to have over the past couple of years, and somebody who kind of seems refreshed and ready to go. Hope you enjoy it. The Fansmanship.com podcast right here on Fansmanship.com. I'm here on the Fansmanship.com podcast with Joe Calero, the Cal Poly men's basketball coach. Coach Calero is entering his fourth season here at Cal Poly. And
wow. Time's flying.
And in his three seasons here, the team's gone from 7-21 the year before he got here, 12-19 his first year, 15-15 overall, and 18-15 last year, including Big West semifinal, tournament semifinal loss during the last game of the year. How's it going today, Coach?
Well, great. I appreciate you pointing out the success that we've had. We've done a nice job. I think the assistant coaches in the program and those who've left the program and graduated have really helped us move the needle a little bit and kind of build this program to the point that we expect to have a good winning season, that we expect to have kids graduate, we expect to have kids to be part of the community and doing well, and I expect us to continue the development. And going from 12 wins to 15 wins to 18 wins is a credit to the assistant coaches, and it's a credit to the student-athletes, and it's a credit to, you know, the leadership that we're getting around the entire department and having a new athletic director add some additional energy, and Don Oberhelman has been new and exciting as well as our new president. Jeff Armstrong has added some great energy to our athletic department. It's been a nice ride, and I've actually had a chance this summer to take 7 or 8 days off and spend time with my wife and daughter who just turned 13, and we went up to Seattle and had a family reunion and a family wedding and getting, you know, re-energized for the new season coming up.
You have a big family reunion, I guess, right? I mean, that's the one thing one of the major things I've read about you. You got a big family, right?
I'm one of 16 children. For those out there in blog in land and computer world, you know, it's a real blessing to have such a family tie. And we had 14 of my siblings were back for the wedding and the reunion. One of my brothers who is in Spain was unable to make it over. But, you know, it really is a unique experience to have that type of family support and background, and those good old family fights are keep me on my toes as well.
Excellent. So what's the most fun thing you did in the off season? Was it the family reunion? Was it kind of just taking some time off?
I'd have to say, you know, making the trip on up to family reunion, but on the way back from the family reunion, we stopped at Lake Shasta, and my daughter and I, we grabbed a wave runner. Sea-Doo, whatever they call it out there, and we zipped around that lake for about 2 hours, and it was 95 degrees, but on that water it was gorgeous, and we were jumping waves and finding coves and spinning around, and I felt like I was 20 years old again. Awesome. And for somebody turning 50 this week, feeling 20 was a great opportunity to rejuvenate my blood. My blood was flowing, that's for sure.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
Describe kind of the off season for a college basketball head coach and your staff. Kind of what's a typical off season? How has this off season been? How much contact time do you get with your players? You know, how does that look for you guys?
Well, this has been one of the most enjoyable off seasons for me in my coaching career because of a new NCAA rule that was implemented this year that allowed us to work with our athletes for 8 weeks. We were allowed 2 hours a week to actually work with them, as well as they were involved in weight training, conditioning. And so for us to actually have some practices during the summer where we got to work with the, you know, we signed five new bodies, or actually five young men who haven't been in the program, including a walk-on and Anthony Silvestri. But we've added a Zach Allman and a Brian Bennett, Josh Hall, and Zach Gordon are four of the freshmen that were recruited by us. And then Anthony Silvestri was the walk-on that was here at school that made the team. But also we have two redshirt freshmen that haven't played yet, in Joel Allwich and Reese Morgan. So you bring the total of that, the seven new faces who have not played a game for Cal Poly. And we think that that's certainly having those summer practices where we can develop some team chemistry and really, you know, establish our philosophy with those guys during practice has been a great joy. But the month of July really has spent a lot of time on the road. We were given, the NCAA gives us about five or six-day recruiting periods in which we're able to go out and hit these major recruiting events. And so the range from going to Indianapolis to Las Vegas and in L.A., and you know, most of those cities it's 100 and plus degrees and long 16-hour days in the gym that we love. But you know, after about a month of that, you get a little tired of chasing around 17-year-old athletes. So, you know, August gives us a chance for us to catch our breath, and then we prepare to go back on the road in September to start doing home visits for the next recruiting class.
Awesome. I read a recent article about assistant coach Mitch Freeman, right?
Yeah.
And what he's gone through in the off season. Assistant coaches generally don't get the headlines, but what has Mitch meant to the staff? And talk a little bit about your assistants and getting him kind of back close to or at full strength this year.
Well, Mitch has been an assistant coach for me for 6 years, and he's starting his seventh year. You know, it's my 3 years at Cal Poly, but he was also an assistant for me at Seattle University prior to coming down to Cal Poly. And so he really understands, you know, the dynamics of who I am and how I like stuff and how to communicate with me, and keeps me organized and pointed. And when we lost him for about a month, you know, he was sick for a good week, and then he was hospitalized for 2 more weeks, and then his recovery period took another week or two. So for him really out of the mix for well over 4 to 5 weeks, it was hard for me personally because how much I counted on him in many aspects, from recruiting to organization to scheduling. I'm having the most experienced staff, you know, most experienced member of the staff missing for that amount of time. But I got to give credit to, you know, Coach Kirby, new on the staff, picked up some slack. Coach Omar Lowry was excellent on the recruiting end, really helping me get organized, where I got to go, what players I need to see. And then we had the director of basketball operations, Mitch Reeves, step into Mitch Freeman's role and travel for him on the road. And so we had some reassignment you know, responsibilities, which really helped. So just like a team, when somebody's hurt, the rest of the guys on the team got to pick it up. And now it was a staff member who was very ill, you know, now he's kind of on that track recovery, and we welcome him back and need him back, and now everybody kind of gets back to some of their roles. But thanks for asking, and appreciate everybody's support during his illness.
With a staff that you discuss, it's you know, capable staff. It seems like you're kind of the CEO of the basketball program, and the assistant coaches being kind of, I guess, middle management, and then the players being the guys who are doing a lot of the work. If you buy into that kind of a structure, but how would you describe your management style or your kind of style of as far as managing the players and the staff?
Well, I think there's a fine line. You know, there's different words to use, whether you're managing, whether you're leading, whether you're organizing. You know, I think one of the things that I take great pride in my leadership style is I like to continue to evolve and be educated with it. I've changed dramatically over the type of leader I was my first 5 years of coaching, the 10 years, the 15-year mark. And, you know, I completed my 25th year of coaching last year, and I think that you still have to be hands-on. You still have to be in the trenches with the players, and you have to get in the weight room once in a while, and you need to sit down and laugh with the players. You need to have pizza with the players. You need to laugh with the coaches. We took all the coaches out golfing one day, and you know, you've got to do some different things because we spend so much time together, and we're so competitive that you get blind to, you know, having fun. You got to make sure that when you work in these 16-hour days, you got to. So I think that my overall style is that of I'm a bit of a chameleon. You know, the days
that
I've gotten
in. How has that changed? How has that changed over the years?
Well, I think I'm much more strategic and not as a knee-jerk reaction. You know, I think that you got to look at stuff and have a plan. And we have staff meetings every Monday, but then I have individual meetings. And then we have a lot more, you know, communication during the evening. I might send an email to one coach or text message or talk to one. And I think you just have to approach each coach like you do each player. Each coach is different and are going and have different responsibilities, and so and have different personalities, and they have different strengths, and all of them are critically important to our organization. So I think the best leaders really have a chameleon ability to show different colors and use different styles for different people,
depending on what's appropriate.
Depending what's appropriate, the appropriate time.
Great. We'll get to. I do want to talk about the seven new guys. And we'll definitely get to that. But I want to start by talking about the returning players. Of the returning players in your mind, which one or two players kind of has the biggest potential to make the kind of a big leap forward from last year? All of them have been working over the offseason. Obviously, okay. you've been trying to get them all to kind of work hard on parts of their game probably. But who can maybe a fan come in and see and say, wow, that guy's like kind of, it's easy to see that guy's made kind of some strides from this year to the next year.
Well, you know, honestly, all seven of them have improved. The thing that I think that we're going to see is which of those seven is going to stay the healthiest the longest and have that chance to really gain confidence and gain rhythm. You know, what happens in sport and life and is you got to gain traction, you know, and the longer you're at a job and the longer you're in a home and the longer you're around people, the more traction gain. And for us, if you take example, Drake Uyu was really coming on last year, and Drake, injured his hand. And so, you know, he kind of lost the rest of the season, and then he lost most of the spring, and now he's kind of recovering. Chris O'Brien was a starter his sophomore year and blew his knee out last year, so he has the opportunity to come in and compete for a starting spot. Kyle Otister was a first-team all-freshman player and had a game over 20 points as a freshman, and then he had an ankle injury that lasted over 12 months, and he missed the entire sophomore season and then half of his junior year. He was rusty. Reese Morgan was a kid that started on our trip to Costa Rica as a freshman last year, was our second leading scorer on a trip, and he had a knee injury at the end of the season, so he has that chance to really pop his head up. You know, then take a guy like Chris Eversley, who has a ton of talent, physically very gifted. And the second half of the season, we used him. He had a number of double-doubles as a starter. And then we realized as a team we were better with him coming off the bench because he gave us a great spark off the bench with his offense. So depending upon what player, the point guards, both Jamal Johnson and Malik Love have started for us, have had impact for us, and based upon who's healthy, you know, who's able to, you know, get off to a good start and stay on top there. You know, that's one of the coach's favorite thing is to say, hey, we got seven players that are returning who have started games and played, you know, well over 20 minutes in any given game. So when you look at our overall experience level, I think seven good, solid returners that have really gone to war with us, that makes me feel very comfortable about our ability to compete during the preseason schedule, which is, I think, the most ambitious and aggressive we've ever put together here at Cal Poly.
I definitely want to talk about that in a second. Kind of the blueprint for a guy kind of, like you said, popping their head up might be kind of like Chris Eversley did last year. Like you said, beginning of the year was kind of hit and miss. Some games were really good. Some games maybe wasn't on the court as much.
Yeah.
You guys had a lot of depth at the forward spots.
And Chris was still, he was still new to the program in the sense that he was still learning the defensive concepts. Right. Offensively, he was skilled, but he turned the ball over and charged a lot and wasn't comfortable out there.
So the middle of the year,
It took him 2 or 3 months. It took him a couple months to get comfortable, and then he blossomed. And I think that's what we're talking about. But he stayed very healthy. He stayed very positive. He had a great attitude. He had a great work ethic. And so through the course of the season, he kept improving and was a shining star for us by late in the year.
Right. So in the front court, I mean, when you talk about guys who are – I don't know what Drake Uyu's listed at, but when you talk about guys who are listed as forwards,
small forward.
So, but when you talk about guys coming back, Chris is really the one big guy in the front court coming back. Talk a little bit about a lot of your freshmen being
being a lot of big, they're going to have to get minutes at forward. I mean, when you look at it, there are guys that are going to have to play, right?
We went out and aggressively recruited freshmen that we thought could, you know, compete for playing time and take a guy like Chris Eversley and say, okay, Chris Eversley should be ahead of him now. He's 21 years old. He's a junior. He's redshirted a year. He's strong physically, ready to go. Now it's going to be the opportunity for freshmen like Joe Alwich, who is a redshirt freshman, who will be ready to go. He's long, he's quick, he's athletic. He's learning a little bit about a system. And then the other four-man that can play to them is a local product from San Luis Obispo here, Mission Prep, Zach Allman. And Zach is skilled. He can shoot the three. Now, he's not as physically strong as a Chris Eversley, and he's maybe not as quick as Joe Alwich, but he's maybe as skilled as any of them. He handles the ball pretty well for 6'7". He's gained about 5 to 10 pounds in muscle since the end of a graduation for him. He's had a very good summer. He's very coachable, very enthusiastic. He fits into our personality of our team, and he's already gone to summer school and done a real nice job. And then we look at the inside guys. I mean, that's where the five men. Brian Bennett, 6'9", 245 pounds, out of Chicago. He's gonna be an immediate player for us, as well as Zach Gordon. So two freshmen that have proven that in our workouts this summer that they can bang it and grind with anybody out there. That it's critical for us. You know, I think that's a big important step for us to know these freshmen. You know, they're bigger and stronger. They're as big and strong as we've had in Will Taylor and Will Donahue. They both have a couple inches in height over them and longer arms. So I think we're gonna be you're gonna notice a bigger and a taller and more. We probably have 6 or 7 players that are above the rim now. I think in the past we've had 2 or 3,
right.
And now we have more players that are more athletic above the rim.
Zach Gordon was a little bit of a late signing, right? So can you tell me a little bit about him?
Yeah, it's really a great story because Zach was. He really fell below the radar because his senior summer, he injured his knee and was out his entire senior year. So he missed his summer, and so he had a couple Division I offers from other schools that he was looking for a better academic fit, and so he played through his and recovered for his senior season, and he had a couple 20-point rebounds and or 20-point games and 20 rebound games. He was from the Northwest, so we were aware of him. And we kept an eye on him. He came down and on an unofficial visit, met the players and met the program, the coaches, and toured the campus. And within a month's time, it came together that we were looking at some junior college answers. We just basically really made more commitment to bringing freshmen in, teaching them and developing them. And we still like the notion of junior college players, but if we can find the right freshman and have a program guy here for 4 or 5 years, we're going to go that route.
Great. And having some time during the summertime too with a lot of these guys is a big deal. Is this kind of what you used the Costa Rica trip for last year and you actually got the time with them this year without having to go on a trip like to Costa Rica?
Is it's just for coach, you know, it allows us to not only get to know the players, what their strengths and weaknesses, but build relationships with them and, you know, find out more about their personality, what makes them tick and what their weaknesses are. Where do they need to be pushed? Whether it's they need pushed in the weight room, do they need pushed to get more shots up? Do they need to learn? Do they need to watch more video? You know, the part of coaching is evaluating what you have and coaching, you know, the weaknesses and playing up their strengths.
Sure. Before last year started and the year before, like you said, Chris O'Brien was a starter. He was, and you seem to be really high on Chris. Talk about what kind of a loss that was and what guys can expect from him, what fans can expect from him this year, and why is he as important as he is to your team?
Well, Chris, like from a baseball coaches or managers, them, you know, he's a utility infielder. The guy can do a little bit of everything. You know, he started his entire sophomore season for us. He was by far one of the most consistent defenders. He's 6'5". He's strong. He understands the game of basketball. His father was a high school coach. He's still recovering. He's still getting his speed, quickness, endurance back from the knee injury.
He had a knee injury.
But, yeah, he had ACL, and blew his ACL out, was out the entire season. So he came back this summer and worked out about 75% of the time. Now he's recovering his knee a little bit more, and he should be ready to go for full speed conditioning September 15th when we all get back to school. But he's a guy who can defend. He passes the ball well. He's a smart post-up player as a three-man. You know, he gives us great balance because we have Drake Uyu and Chris O'Brien at the three spot now. And those are two experienced seniors that we feel like can settle us down. They're mature. They're confident.
Seems like they're both pretty versatile, too. You talk about Chris being able to play a lot of positions. Seems like, you know, Drake can give you a little bit of time at the four, potentially.
Well, you know, if we want to play small at the end of the game, we need more ball handling, we can bring him in. And we can play, you know, a couple different forwards at that, just depending on what style you're playing, whether the team's pressing you or you're trying to protect the lead or you're trying to press and catch up. You know, both those guys are strong enough, over 215 pounds at 6'5", that they can go ahead and play some 3-4 and give us a mobile lineup.
Great. Defense has definitely been the trademark in your first 3 years here. Any reason to think your team's going to be playing in the 80s and 90s this year?
Well, you know, I think that we've shown in the last couple of years our offense has continued to you know, climb. And we've improved our scoring each season. But we're not gonna just run to shoot poor shots. You know, the most important part of good defense is an offense that takes good shots and has court balance. Meaning you gotta shoot the ball and making sure that you're balanced enough that you have two defenders back so the team doesn't get easy runouts. We were top 25 in the nation the last 2 years, and we think that's helped establish an identity to our program. And we recruit kids that are not afraid to play defense. We got to find good offensive players, but we want kids that are tough, hard-nosed, and want to defend first. And then we want to continue to improve our offense and get to that level where we do have opportunistic breaks. But I don't anticipate playing in the 80s. I do see us playing in the 70s, though. Sure, and I think we creep up to 70, 75 points a night.
Last year in the Big West, kind of as the season went on, you guys had one game here where you buried, I think, 11
straight three-pointers.
And that was against Northridge. And then I think you guys went down to Northridge and
missed about seven in a row.
Right. So
a game of basketball, right?
So do you feel like something like that, you're never bummed that your team's missing shots, but do you feel like a game like that sometimes gets a team out of their rhythm even with shot selection or taking shots?
Well, you brought up a great point. See, in basketball, you're going to have nights that you make shots that you shouldn't make.
Right.
That night, we made 11 straight three-pointers. Five or six of those shots were closely guarded, end of the shot clock, and you just make shots. Well, defense, you can be consistent with every night. And so you go right back to it. I think it's the perfect example. Why is Coach Clara so defensive-oriented? Because defense can be consistent every night. Defense and rebounding keeps you in every game every night. Then if you get hot, and you'll get on a roll like we did against Northridge, where we hit 11 straight threes and we're ahead by 33 points at half.
Right.
Well, you turn around, you play that same team and you play good defense, but now you miss those shots. Well, now it's a tie game at half.
Right.
So it swings so much, but you want defense to be there consistently. And that's why we're able to win 18 games, is because, you know, we're a very good defensive team.
Great. You've been in San Luis now for 3 years. Beyond your kind of first impressions of the area, describe kind of have you found any new spots on the Central Coast over the last year or so?
Journey. Yeah, well, I think you always get drawn to the beach around here, you know, and so you learn about the different beaches and, you know, the different weather patterns from Morro Bay to Avila Beach. If you want the fog, go to Morro Bay. If you want the sunshine, go to Avila.
I grew up in Cayucas. I love that Morro Bay.
Okay,
fog.
So
yeah,
you know all about it then. And then if you want the wind, you can go down to Pismo or Grover, and that wind will, you know, windsurfers will be down there.
Yep.
One of the things I've learned in the last year is, of course, looking out, you know, inland a little bit, and Lake Nacimiento. You also have Lopez Lake out there. Yep. But we took a recent trip and took that back road. There's a back road that goes from Lopez Lake area all the way up to Pozo.
Mm-hmm.
And we went, my wife and I took a little Sunday afternoon drive that took about 4 hours and crossed the creek
about six or seven times
and ended up at the Pozo Tavern and had a cold beverage there and made our journey back down to, all the way, backside of Atascadero there. So it was a great journey. And I think that the beauty of the Central Coast sometimes get lost. You think of the wineries and you think of the beautiful coast, but sometimes the beauty inside the mountains and the back roads there is gorgeous as well. So it's been fun. It's been a great exploring the Central Coast. In 3 years, we feel like we're truly locals now.
Absolutely. What's your favorite other sport? I know you used some golf analogies last year. You used the baseball manager analogy just now. It seems like you kind of are – are a sports fan too at some level of other sports.
I am, and
do you watch a lot of other sports besides basketball?
You know, I love watching Cal Poly teams compete. You know, I always catch a couple of soccer games, and I even swam when I was a kid. You know, Tom Millich and I have gotten to be good friends, a swim coach, and you know, we're able to go out and golf in the summer once or twice, and getting to know the other coaches. I'm a big college football fan. Enjoy, you know, Larry Lee's team out there and following success of our baseball team and so forth. So, you know, my sister ran track at University of Oregon, so I'm familiar with track and field quite a bit. My brother-in-law that ran a steeplechase. So I think in the course of, being a coach, you get to know more about their teams. But if I had, if I really had to pick my favorite last other sport, it's truly golf. I think golf puts a guy like me right into place, that it's such a humbling sport that you think you're playing well and you can play well and you have three or four holes where you par, get a birdie, and then you end up with a seven or an eight and a big fat snowman, and you realize, boy, how good those pros really are, how good the Cal Poly athletes really are. So I think golf really makes you mature as a person.
Yeah, it really shows kind of, because there's always adversity in golf, right? I mean, no matter what, you're gonna have a couple of those holes, and I find that more often than not, it's hard to not go in the tank after a number of bad holes. That's, you know, it's kind of seems to momentum wise.
Well, it's
get worse and worse.
Like I said, it challenges one's maturity.
I talked to Amari Furman a couple times over the off season, and he signed with the Dominican team and played a little bit with the Dominican national team at Central Basket tournament down there. And that national team was one close game away from making the Olympics. Did you watch the Olympics, by the way?
Did. I got to catch at least two or three of the games and absolutely love it. I just think that the fact that we have our pros and our dream team guys, I think that's helped the world with basketball and the impact that we had, 20 years ago with the dream team playing in Barcelona. That's what's happened in Spain, and so many more pros are coming out of Europe now because of the exposure to the game that we gave them.
So I guess the question, and back to kind of Amari, I talked to him, he's going to be able to, or he's playing professionally somewhere. Does being able to put guys in positions to play professionally, is that a big kind of, I know it seems like it's something that you're proud of. It's something that's in the media guide. It's something that you talk about, that you tweet about, you know, whether it's Brian Scalabrine or whoever. What does that mean for you as far as trying to recruit players? Does it help in recruiting? Are those types of guys that you want to recruit? Paul Holoher, and I'm kind of asking a question and continuing on, but it's okay. Paul Holoher said that he wants to recruit guys who want to have the attitude of guys who want to play professionally somewhere at some point. The soccer coach, is that something that you try to do as well?
Well, we simplified even down to a real basic level. I tell parents, and I tell the student athletes that we recruit, we want to make you a pro. Now, whether that's a pro that goes on to play professionally in basketball, or that's a pro that takes a position and tries to get into medical school, is basically my job is to prepare these young men to earn a living, to be a contributing member to our society, and change their life and improve their life for the betterment of our society and families and parents and everything else. So if that's basketball and they can earn a living and be, very, very, healthy and excited as contributing members of societies as a professional basketball player, then I think that's absolutely wonderful. If David Hansen or Matt Tichenor is going to go to graduate school, I think that's wonderful. I think that I'm just as proud of our players that have gone on and become financial planners and have worked with youth or have worked in and got into coaching or who have gone into medical school and dental school. We love it when our players are able to go on and be pros in athletics or sports and basketball. But, I think that's just one of the great ways you can be successful here at Cal Poly. And we want them to realize that, whether you're being recruited or on, is that, going on and playing professionally is an option. But the same skills it requires to be an NBA player or a pro overseas are the same skills they're going to require to be a pro at anything else you do. Hard work, showing up on time, being a great teammate, having passion for whatever you choose to do. So I always say, just check your heart and see where you really want to pursue that, because I was fortunate to pursue basketball as a career. Right. And here I am 25 years later, you know, living the dream, sure. Truly living the dream.
Talk to me about when you're at, when you're up in the Northwest, what's the perception if, or what was your perception of San Luis Obispo and Cal Poly? For a lot of people, it seems like it's kind of this place in kind of no man's land between LA and San Francisco. And I talk to people from LA and they picture San Luis Obispo, you know, oh, that's right next to Santa Barbara, right? Well, it's actually about an hour and a half drive. It's not just right next to it. What was your perception of Cal Poly and of San Luis before you got here?
Well,
And how has that changed?
You know, prior to coming to Cal Poly, and to the county, San Luis County, I'd only been in the county one time, and that's when we had played down here. I was coaching at Seattle University, and we came down here. My initial impression was that it was much more remote than I ever imagined, you know, because I was actually down in Santa Barbara recruiting at a junior college tournament, and I went down a half day early and watched a tournament and then drove up the coast and met the team in San Luis.
Okay.
At that time, I explained to my wife that this place would be great place to vacation. I saw Pismo Beach, I saw all the vineyards, sure. I saw the beautiful coastline, and I said, what a fantastic place. I didn't imagine that you could actually live here because you'd have to have a job here. So I think most of the people that from the state of Washington, from Chicago, from Texas are recruiting, when they say San Luis Obispo, you say Pismo Beach, you say Avila Beach, what they think of is classic California. Surfboards, wine, you know, you have the rolling mountains, the mountain biking, the spas, you know, you think of a vacation, you think of really a destination spot. And then you think, wow, I mean, I could live there. So I always tell people when I travel and recruit, I live where you want a vacation. And so we have a lot of visitors because of that.
I like that line. And having grown up here and lived other places, you know, it's for those people who have grown up here, and I know you've had a few local kids on your on your team, you know, it's kind of hard to conceptualize that until you kind of see other places and say to yourself, oh yeah, like this place is pretty great.
I want to stick around here.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about Amari a little bit and kind of your thoughts on him being able to play professionally.
Well, it's great because Amari worked so hard to get to complete his degree at Cal Poly. And Amari was offered a pro contract prior to the end of spring quarter when he still had some classes to make up and finish to graduate. And he made a very conscious decision that he wanted to make sure that every one of his classes were done before accepting a pro contract, completing his degree, and then getting an opportunity to play in the Dominican national team with Coach Calipari, who was at Kentucky, who just came off a national championship. So here he was. He delayed that. He got a chance to play on the national team. They were one game away from having an opportunity to make it to the Olympics. And he signed a pro contract. He's in the DR right now. Yeah. He was on one team. He actually was traded to traded to a team that was in second place.
Okay.
And so, somebody had a little bit more money and offered a trade to upgrade him in a position to be on a second place team.
Great.
And so he's pretty excited about that. He just sent me a text a couple days ago regarding that when assistant coaches had some FaceTime with him on the with the phone. So, you know, it's been a great ride for him as he's, you know, learned how to be a pro. And now he'll probably play another month or two. And then he'll sign another contract down in South America.
Okay.
And, he's Spanish speaking.
Yeah.
So the adjustment for Amari is minimal. I think right now I fear for his safety a little bit. I believe there's a huge storm and hurricane headed for Dominican Republic right now.
Really?
Haiti. Yeah, I think there's one brewing in the coast there. So my wife had sent me a text this morning saying that the DR is preparing for a major storm. So we'll see what happens with that and how he makes out and how the island handles that storm coming.
Yeah, the whole island. I mean, with Haiti in there, you know, right next to him, and that's something I didn't know. Breaking weather news.
Yeah,
who knew?
Yeah.
What's one thing about yourself that not too many people know that like give me like a fun Joe Calero fact, something that not a lot of people know. I mean, having 16.
Well, I'm embarrassed to talk about this but my wife will attest to this. I have one or two crazy stupid things about me, and one is that I watch the History Channel, and I watch it nightly. It's how I fall asleep, watching the History Channel, and I love all the history about the wars and the military, And I for whatever reason, I love the leadership that goes along with it, the history behind it. I'm kind of a history buff when it comes to the History Channel. But one of my other favorite shows is I love. She thinks I'm half nuts, but I follow all the UFO and aliens.
The what if stuff on the History Channel.
Yeah, the 2012 the Mayan calendar and the world gonna end. So when we play, we have a game on December 20th at University of Washington, and I call it the end of the world game because on December 21st, 2012, the world's supposed to end if you watch if you take a look at the Mayan calendar. So I love reading and researching about the end of the world. So. You know what? I'm not afraid for the world to end. And even my daughter says, "Dad, you're always looking at these aliens in Area 51." I said, "Well, you never know. There could be some little green men running around there and have abducted bodies and so forth." So I've got a little 2012 and alien side to me.
Okay. Very good. Awesome. Well, one more thing I wanted to ask, and it's kind of a follow up to something you said earlier. You talked about how the new athletic director and president have kind of injected additional life into the athletic department and to the basketball program especially. Can you quantify that, or can you talk a little bit about it? And then how important is it to have leaders kind of beyond just the head coach who are also supporting what's going on
here? Well, you know, everybody's aware of the economic crisis, and everybody is probably aware of the California economic crisis. Then that translates to the educational economic crisis, sure. And then the University of Cal Poly specifically, and the cuts that we've had to make. Well, athletics has had to take a number of cuts as well, and there certainly has not been any increase to budgets. So when you're in a climate like that, leadership has to have some optimism and some energy, and Don Oberhelm has been very enthusiastic and optimistic about trying to do the most that we can with what we have.
In the
current, financial crisis. Jeff Armstrong has done a great job in the last year or two leading us through a very, turbulent time. And what both of them give is optimism that, hey, this is tough right now, but if we continue to work and look for outside resources and fundraise outside the university, we can make ends meet, and we can continue to move the program forward. We did some fundraising that we're going to add new hoops to the gym.
Okay.
And it's going to all come from private sources. And we're going to continue to try to improve it by buying some new chairs, and we're adding some courtside seating right underneath the hoop.
Okay.
And so the new courtside seats will also add some additional revenue to help pay for the new hoops and for the new chairs. So
got it.
Those are small things, but they're not small. That is significant to show that we're still trying to improve Cal Poly athletics, because that will benefit the women's program and help volleyball. And so each year we're going to try to do some, be creative to find ways to improve revenue, as well as that can be translated to improving the overall presentation of the program that we run here. And I think Don and Jeff deserve the credit for being supportive, that saying, hey, no matter how small, we always want to try to be moving forward in the program.
Sure. Growing up around here, I've gone to Cuesta and Cal Poly games for as long as I can remember. I was down in Brian's office earlier and saw the picture from the NC State game that I was at in the mid-90s. I think Todd Fuller was playing for NC State, big lefty guy. And so I love Mott Gym as much as anybody. Is it, given the economic times, is it inappropriate? I mean, they're scuttlebutt, and people, everybody talks, not everybody, a lot of people I've seen and heard talk about, what's kind of next for Cal Poly facilities-wise, especially when Don was first announced as the new AD. Is it inappropriate to talk about those things given the time, or is that something is that an issue that
No, I think it's very appropriate. Yeah. I think it's appropriate to talk about that we're always going to try to improve our facilities. We've got to continue to try to improve the program. Now, the sensitive part is the fact that the state doesn't have extra money,
right,
and the school doesn't have extra money. So any improvements that come to Cal Poly have to be basic maintenance or safety issues, and or we got to do private. They got to be, we got to private fundraising, and we got to have the boosters and supporters that realize, we want to continue to move the program forward, and we don't want to fall, too much farther behind, as we have one of the oldest facilities on the West Coast, and we just got to make sure it's always safe, it's always clean, it's always presentable, and that we offer a product that the rest of the community and the university can be proud of. And we are running a Division I program. So, you know, when you have hoops that are have been in place for 50 or 60 years, you start looking at the safety issues and reliability issues of those type hoops and saying, look, we got to continue to update that. And you want to give your fans and supporters the best experience possible. So,
especially adding seven chairs, or eight guys above the rim.
Now you've got to have hoops that can support that. Now you've got to have guys dunking and hopefully not pulling the whole roof down. So, I mean, we're looking at a lot of those improvements. And I think that the common man can look at that and say, yeah, certain things are basically, you know, keeping up with the basic technology and safety and functionality of any type of program. So I think that, you know, over the course of the next couple of years, we'll evaluate, you know, between the AD, the coaches, and the leadership above that president, you know, what are the most economically feasible methods in which we can continue to improve the program that also can enhance revenue generation, whether that's a new scoreboard that might have revenue generation, you know, whether that's seating that has revenue generation. Right, yeah, yes. Yeah. So we got to always look at that so we can always pay our bill.
Definitely. All right, Coach, I really appreciate it. Anything else you want to add?
Oh, I love it. I love being here. I appreciate you following us, giving us a chance to shout out to the friends and families of the programs out there.
Give me some quick dates. You guys start practice.
We start conditioning September 15th. We have about a month of conditioning where we have 2 hours a week of practice and 6 hours a week of conditioning. October 15th will be our first actual practice where we get all the guys together for a couple, two, 3 weeks. And then 2 weeks after that, we're going to have a green and gold scrimmage.
Okay.
And that's a scrimmage in which we're, you know, going to get a chance to come on out and see our guys, you know, play. You know, it'll be a 5 o'clock green and gold scrimmage, which will be, you know, inter-squad scrimmage. And it'll be a game right before a men's soccer game that evening at 7 o'clock. Right, so you come on by and pick your head in the door. It's free to anybody in the community to come by and grab a little program and put some faces and names together. I think you'll be surprised at the strength and the length and the athleticism that we have in this year's team.
That's on the 27th.
October 27th. Yeah. And then our first actual game will be on the 15th of November.
So this is something I didn't ask you, and I wanted to get to it. You're at TCU in the preseason, you have a couple of other games, Northern Colorado and Fresno State here. Then you're at UCLA, at St. Mary's, later on in the preseason, the end of the world game at Washington.
There you go.
That's four really tough road games, and I didn't ask you about that.
Well, and Nevada as well. And Nevada's the defending WAC champion there, too. So I think there's five very high major games, the conference champions. Nevada was a conference WAC champion. Washington was a conference champion. St. Mary's was a West Coast conference champion. There's three conference champions. UCLA is a perennial champion, the number one ranked recruiting class in America with at least four or five NBA players on the team there. Yeah. I'm proud of our schedule. I think it's a tremendously ambitious schedule is the word I used in the release, because I think I want to continue to raise the bar for our student athletes to look at those programs and those athletes as well as our supporters and saying, we're not going to dodge anybody. Next year, we're already working on, we're contacting Michigan State. We're looking at playing Texas, maybe possibly going to either North Carolina, Indiana. I've reached out and talked to coaches throughout the nation. I'm looking at going to New York, possibly St. John's.
Wow.
Princeton. So we're going to continue with this process. This is this year's schedule. It's done. I think it's a tremendous challenge for our student athletes and our coaching staff, but it's not going to stop. We're going to continue to raise that bar and continue to chase the biggest names in college basketball, and that's going to add the challenge as we add San Diego State to the conference, potentially adding Boise State to the conference. We need to continue to raise the bar so that our recruits understand that we're going after the biggest and best programs. And last year we did it. We were able to knock off USC, a Pac-12 team, on their home court.
Yeah.
We were able to go out and compete and knock off San Jose State up on their court. We beat Fresno State at Fresno State last year for the first time in 41 years. So you're not going to win big games like that till you play big teams like that.
Right.
And so now we're on our way and continue to challenge our team.
It's a little – I went to – I got a chance to be in Madison last season and caught a game there, and I know you guys had visited there the year before.
We got beat by 40 though when we were there.
That facility and that setting, just Big Ten. I've never experienced Big Ten basketball before. That was really cool for me to see, and I wrote about it, how when a guy was starting to take a bad shot, 14,000 people are yelling, no, don't take that shot. And they're kind of, and when he takes a good shot, you kind of feel, that's a really good shot. The crowd is, it seemed like it was kind of that, like, knowledgeable, and just, it was almost like a weird, like, energy thing between what was going on the court and what was going on.
Well, if you had to live in Wisconsin in the winter, you would go to the gym very, very early, and you stay very late, and you watch a lot of basketball because it's 10 degrees below zero.
Uh-huh.
And you go to the Midwest, there is a there are very serious basketball fans because it's very cold and there's not much else to do. It's a great environment for a basketball coach.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best place to live all the time. So I think that's why I think we've got one of the best jobs in the world, is that we're living in paradise.
There you go.
Maybe the basketball, maybe we don't have 14,000 fans, but we have 3,000 great ones, and I love where we're at.
Absolutely. How excited are you guys to go to Hawaii this year?
Well,
trip-wise.
I think the one thing we always like to do is make sure that the players know that we're going there to try to win a game. But at the same time, if we take care of our business, we get our practice done the day before, we fly in, we practice, that we're definitely going to give those guys a couple hours at the beach and go snorkeling, and then we go and kind of go out and have a little barbecue that night.
Yeah.
And we enjoy it. We enjoy it. And it's something that the coaches and the players, we have to realize, that the fans realize, we're only there for 48 hours. And so we try to squeeze a little fun into it. But most importantly, we want to squeeze a W into the trip.
And you guys went out there a couple years ago and did that, I think, right?
Yep, we beat them for the Bracket Buster two years ago.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, Coach Claro, I really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll catch you.
Thanks for the coverage. We're loving it.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.
So what is fansmanship.com?
Say what?
We're a sports website by the fans for the fans.
He wants to be a Laker.
For the Central Coast.
Catch the ball.
California.
The sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig.
And beyond.
Tim Tebow.
We love sports. Fansmanship.com. By the fans for the fans.
Flashing clip-on nipple piercing and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free.
Yeah. Fansmanship.com, by the fans, for the fans.